As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
Hello, I'm Dan Bardell. Welcome to 1874, The Athletic's podcast all about Aston Villa Football Club. Greg's on holiday, not exactly global, but I'm still jealous of him, and I'm sorry to say that Holly has left us for pastures new. So it's just me this week, but luckily, Ollie Kay was at Villa Park on Tuesday night for The Athletic, so he'll be along shortly to discuss that game with me. It'll actually be nice to get an outsider's perspective on where the club sits right now. But before we get into the Liverpool game, let's briefly catch up on the win at Burnley. Greg did make it to that one and he left us a short encapsulation of his thoughts before he packed up his caravan.
We spread quietly, but Aston Villa are finally starting to look like a decent team again. This was probably the most complete performance of the season and the only blot on the card was the last goal that they conceded. Just look at Emi Martinez's reaction and you'll learn about how much it hurt to those Villa players when they did concede late on. But I don't think this was a day to focus on any of the negatives. You know, Villa were very impressive throughout. Probably the best performance under Steven Gerrard. You know, it was certainly up there with the performances against Leeds and against Southampton. And I think that Villa just seem to find a way to win against these lower ranked teams in the division now. They're making light work of the likes of Norwich and Southampton, as I mentioned, and Burnley. And the fact that they've got Burnley again in just a couple of weeks, I think they'll go into that game with a lot of confidence. The positives from the day, I think Emi Buendia was excellent, scored a goal and set up another and played a part in the third. I think that his introduction into the team ahead of Philippe Coutinho was justified. It'd be interesting to see whether he keeps his place on Tuesday. I think Ings and Watkins both scoring again was another positive. You know, the fact that they've both scored in back-to-back games now, clearly there's a nice chemistry developing between the two. And also Callum Chambers in defensive midfield helped some of the others thrive around him. I thought that at times he did struggle with the pace of the game a little bit, struggled to get up and down, maybe as effectively as some of the other midfielders in his position have previously. But what he did offer was just that solidity in front of the defence and it just gave the likes of McGinn and Louise and then obviously Buendia, Ings and Watkins that licence to attack and create and those were the guys who really caused the damage. If there was any negative, it was letting the goal in late on. You know, Villa have worked very hard to try and keep clean sheets in the last couple of weeks and it would have been three in a row, so that will be disappointing. So yeah, it's all on to Liverpool on Tuesday night, a really tough game, but it'd be interesting to see how they cope against one of the best teams in the division.
Don't forget, you can subscribe to The Athletic for just £1 a month at the moment for the first 6 months. Just head to theathletic.com/villapod. By doing that, you'll get full access to all our great writing and ad-free versions of all The Athletic's podcasts. That's theathletic.com/villapod. Sign up now. On to Tuesday night then, and Steven Gerrard welcomed Liverpool to Villa Park for the first time since taking charge. He had led Villa at Anfield in December, of course, a narrow 1-0 defeat that day. But this was a much more positive performance as we took the fight to Jurgen Klopp's quadruple chasers. Let's hear what Gerrard made of the performance.
I can't ask for any more from my players. Look, we've conceded two poor goals, so we'll certainly analyse that. But outside of that, the players have given me heart, they've given me passion, desire, they give me quality. And we've put in a really good performance, but unfortunately, it's just not enough. But I can't be any more prouder and happier with the performance that my players give. We should always have a purpose. You know, we want to try and finish in the top half of this league. And we realise and respect who we're playing, but it doesn't matter the opponent, especially here at Villa Park. We need to show fight, commitment and application. And I thought every single one of my players gave me 100% and more. So we shouldn't be too down. OK, we're disappointed with the result, but I'm so proud of my team. I'm so happy with what they've given. And we move on to the next game. When you take the lead and you're in a good place, we need to stay in front for a longer period. We need to be more calm. But listen, we also have to realise we're playing against the best players in the world. They're in a fantastic place, so you've got to pay credit where it's due. The both goals are disappointing from our point of view, but you know, we could have scored a few more goals tonight. Some of our link-up play, some of our creative play was outstanding. We've had a 1v1, we've had a header, we've put in some dangerous situations, so we've done everything, but we just couldn't find that second goal to take something from the game. I'm really pleased that we're getting the opportunities. I know on another day we can take them chances. I thought it was a fantastic match. I thought you had two teams giving it everything they've got, but I'm so proud of my players, what they gave tonight. I can't ask for any more. And I've just made sure that they're not sad or down leaving the dressing room. They should be proud of themselves.
Steven Gerrard there, post-match as Villa fell to a 2-1 defeat at home to Liverpool. I'm joined now by Ollie Kay. Ollie was at the game last night as well, covering it for The Athletic. Ollie, how are you?
I'm very good, thank you. A little bit tired.
Same. Good to have you on the podcast, though. You released your piece this morning. I thought you summed it up very, very well, that the mood of the Villa fans, that the tale of the evening. Villa, unlucky, put up a good fight against what isn't an elite football team.
Yeah, I thought, I mean, particularly when you consider so much of the pre-match talk was, oh, well, you know, it's Steven Gerrard against Liverpool. Will they roll over? Will they make it easy? And it's so naive to think that of any team, I think, but especially a Steven Gerrard team. Steven Gerrard, you saw what he was like at Anfield back in December. You know, he'd barely acknowledged that adoring crowd at Anfield. Same last night with Liverpool fans. He just wants to get a result. He knows a result against Liverpool, you know, is incredibly important, not just for his career and people's perceptions of his career, but for the job he's doing right now against Villa. And it was clear that they'd really worked on shape, game plan and attitude and sort of attacking Liverpool's perceived weaknesses. And, you know, I thought it was a really good performance that, particularly the first half when you know, Villa were unlucky not to be going in ahead at the break. But it was, I think Gerrard summed it up nicely. It was, you know, you couldn't fault bravery, ambition, creativity, attitude, heart, desire, etc. And it was two lapses, I think, that were punished by a really good team.
Just back to the Gerrard stuff. The stuff that comes his way, the questions before he's about to play Liverpool both times, I just found them quite disrespectful. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I was talking to somebody at Villa about this last week, and I was saying that, you know, it's inevitable. It's what you get when you appoint Steven Gerrard. You know, he is, you know, massively associated with one club rather than another, and you know, it's like Mark Hughes used to. I remember Mark Hughes used to get it when he was managing Blackburn and even managing Manchester City against Manchester United. It was. You know, that there is that hinterland that you can't get away from and that people are fascinated by, particularly in a game of this magnitude. But it's, you know, I get why it annoys people at Villa. I get why it probably annoys Gerrard when he just wants to talk about his own team and focus on his own team. And I think if Villa fans have ever sort of listened to the, you know, the interviews or read the media coverage when it's been about Gerrard and Liverpool and Gerrard and his love affair with Liverpool, I think it's probably clear after, you know, nearly 6 months of Gerrard at Villa that he's all in with this and he's totally focused, and that's what he's entirely focused on. You know, same as Lampard at Everton. You know, there'll always be talk about Chelsea, even if it's, you know, a job that he's already had and not been able to keep, but you look at him, you look at any manager, you can't go into a management job like that and be half-hearted about it. And I don't think anybody who saw Jarrett at Rangers or seen him at Villa would say he's in any way half-hearted about it. He's all in.
No, he's definitely distanced himself from Liverpool since he's been at Villa when he is asked those questions. That's nice to see from a Villa perspective. Mm-hmm. Now, from minute one, really, atmosphere was up at Villa Park. Always a good atmosphere under the lights at Villa Park. And Villa couldn't have wished for a better start, Ollie. There was a real intensity to the way Villa played the game. And I don't know how, I don't watch every single Liverpool game, but it felt like there was a real plan to get at them from the start, really go at them. And they had to put them under pressure and got that early goal, the perfect start.
Yeah, it was, I mean, Liverpool had made a few changes and look, they weren't to weaken the team. They were to make the team stronger when there are a few tired legs and tired minds. But Villa really went for them. And it was as if they sensed blood, and you could tell that was a message coming from the coach and from the manager. And it was, I thought that was, I'd have to rack my brain, but apart from, maybe Villarreal last week in the Champions League and Manchester City, actually. But I can't remember another team starting like that against Liverpool this season and starting so aggressively, putting them on the back foot, scoring really early and, maybe scoring too early, if that doesn't sound daft, and just getting a little bit overexcited, I don't know. But it was, that first half performance was really, really good. It was so intense, sort of pushing, Liverpool's fullbacks back, putting them in uncomfortable positions, overloading against them 2-1, dangerous crosses, not just hopeful crosses, but dangerous crosses with Luiz and others running into the box. I thought it was a really intelligent, strategic, aggressive first half performance, and I think Liverpool were grateful for the halftime whistle.
Yeah, straight from the off, you've got Ings, you've got Watkins pressing. You referenced Gerrard's change of systems actually in your piece, but I think two up top, I know it's what Villa played the last couple of games anyway, or ended up playing the last couple of games. Feels like a good way to get a Liverpool, the way they defend so high up, two strikers that are pressing them. They were a big part of it from minute one as well, because they didn't really let Liverpool breathe.
Yeah, I mean, you could look at the chances that Ings missed, and the one that ran away from him in the second half in particular. I mean, maybe against a keeper who isn't as sort of formidable at one-on-ones like Alisson is, maybe Ings would have got away with that and got through and scored. But I thought Villa's two forwards were excellent. I mean, Watkins looked like he had in mind what he'd done to Liverpool last season, and Ings looked like he had the inside knowledge of somebody who had shared a dressing room with those guys and had a point to prove. I just felt it was a really, it was a really aggressive performance, really energetic performance. I think Van Dijk, you don't very often see him looking uncomfortable, but two of the very few occasions since he's been at Liverpool 4.5 years have been at Villa Park, and he's, I don't think he enjoys playing against Watkins. I don't imagine he and Matip enjoyed playing against Danny Ings. And those two played really well. And I know people would have liked to have seen Coutinho and Buendia together against Liverpool, probably with the front two, because everybody always wants loads of attack-minded players on the pitch. Nobody ever wants the sort of boring, safe, pragmatic options. But it was the game plan wasn't boring, was it? It was aggressive. It worked in terms of taking Liverpool into areas they didn't want to go into and putting them really on the back foot that first half.
Probably gave Villa the best chance of winning that they could have had as well, that game plan. So although they didn't win or they didn't take anything from the game, I don't think you can really knock the game plan at all, really.
Even Klopp couldn't.
No. I think he was quite complimentary, wasn't he, after the game about Villa. Annoyingly, though, if you do go ahead early, like you say, they almost scored too early. You need just 5-10 minutes of settling time. Villa didn't do that. Villa managed to concede a clumsy goal from a set piece. And when you've gone to the effort of getting ahead and you've got yourself ahead so early, it's so important to sit on it. But Villa just couldn't do it. And a poor goal from a set piece, Ola.
Yeah, it was a really poor one to concede. And I think Tyrone Mings, I mean, I don't know how, I don't know precisely how he was sort of left sort of flat-footed with the ball under his feet, but I mean, it was it was one of a sort of chain reaction of little mistakes which led to the goal. It wasn't just Tyrone Mings getting sort of his feet in a muddle. It was just a messy goal. I even thought the line, you know, I didn't know whether they were trying to play offside, you know, or keep a high straight offside trap, but it looked a bit higgledy piggledy as the ball came in, and it was just sort of, you know, Liverpool, you know, Jota then won the 50-50, Matip got a touch, and Van Dijk, you know, it was the second ball fell to Liverpool, third ball fell to Liverpool, fourth ball. It was not, you know, I think you could look at the second Liverpool goal and say that despite the lapse by Luiz in the build up, you could say that was a brilliantly worked goal in the end. Whereas the equaliser was just a messy goal. It was kind of goal no team even on a park on a Sunday wants to concede. It was just a bit of a mess, really.
I've only seen it back a couple of times. Was there a hint of a foul in there, or am I just clutching at straws a little bit on Konsa, the Jota on Konsa one?
I mean, his feet were quite high, but he got to the ball quite early, didn't he? And you know, I could see, there were Liverpool complaints about what was her offside in the build up to the first, and to look to me like that was that was too far back in the build-up I would have expected both of those goals to stand. You know, you can sometimes see those goals disallowed, but it would have been a bit harsh had one or other of them been disallowed. I think
Villa weren't deterred, though. They're very easy to go under when you've conceded and when you've had something bad happen to you after going ahead. But Villa didn't really. They kept going at Liverpool. I think Coutinho put one just over the bar, and to continue to create chances, really. Luca Dean was always a threat down that left-hand side, and you do kind of feel that, you know, when you watch Villa play a team like Liverpool, and I felt the same when they played Man City at Villa Park as well, then they're not too far away, really, because they're taking games to these teams.
Yeah, I mean, not too far away sounds a bit daft when I'm just sort of looking at the table and, you know, 11th, 43 points from 35 games, and, you know, much closer to Leeds in the relegation zone than to West Ham in seventh in terms of points. But if you actually look at the performance, I mean, I know the game, the results against the top, is it the top eight teams sort of going down to Wolves, have been really disappointing, under Gerrard. But the performances, even the performance against Spurs the other week, lost 4-0, it wasn't a terrible performance. And I think in a lot of those games, they've kept it really competitive, really tight. And it's been, you know, as Gerrard would say, small details, small margins that have settled it in favour of a team with you know, superior players, and in the case of Liverpool and Man City. And the two games against Liverpool, the one game against Man City, and obviously there'll be another one on the final day of the season, they've been really competitive performances, good, strong performances, and of a type which suggests, Villa could, with a bit more quality, a bit more concentration, a bit more luck, I suppose, at times, getting points in these games. And I think that perceptions around Villa and around Stephen Gerrard's Villa would be different. But we see inconsistencies with Villa. I'd say, they've been a bit streaky this season in terms of, the good start and the decent start under Dean Smith, then the whatever it was, five consecutive defeats, good start under Gerrard, then regressed a bit, then it picked up a bit, three straight wins, I think it was, and then four straight defeats, and now seeming to be ending the season on more of a high performance wise. But you do see those inconsistencies. You see those inconsistencies with Palace and Brighton and Leicester and so all the mid-table teams. I think in order to be better than that and to be a more consistent team, it's the really tough thing to crack, isn't it? To go from let's say Villa win two and draw one of the last three games, which should be quite reasonable. I think
I'll be happy with that.
That would be 49 points. It would be probably enough to get 10th or something like that, but to be a team that, you know, they got, was it 55 points last season?
54 or 55, yeah.
But it's to be that team that sort of, I don't know, threatens the, you know, to do what West Ham have done the last couple of seasons or what Leicester had done a couple of seasons before that is, it's really difficult because you're talking about like, I don't know, 10, 12 more points over the course of the season. It's very difficult to be a team that, a mid-table team and then really take it up and you know, become a sort of Europe challenging team. But that is the challenge, especially, you know, for a club of Villa's size, having spent a lot of money and stabilised again in the Premier League. That is obviously the challenge. It's definitely what Steven Gerrard wants.
You say it'd be tough or not, I agree with you. Villa have lost 13 games, I believe, by one goal this season.
Yeah, yeah.
If you turn any of them, one of them into a win, a couple of draws thrown in there, you know, you then aren't far away from Wolves, you're not far away from West Ham.
I think if you looked at Wolves 11 when Villa first came up and you sort of measure the two teams against each other, you'd have said, well, Wolves have got a better squad right now. They've built up over a few years and they're where they deserve to be. I think Wolves have done really well this season. I don't think many people would have had them in sort of eighth. But I think Villa, you know, on paper, it looks a really good team. I don't know whether I just, you know, as somebody who doesn't watch Villa as regularly as you do and Greg Evans watch Villa, but it's, I feel like maybe I just see them on their good days, but it's, I like Nakamba, I like Louise, I like Buendia, I like Cash. You know, Conser and Mings get a bit of grief when they make mistakes, but I think it's a team full of, you know, really good top half Premier League players, and to, you know, it's not really, it's, as you say, it's been small margins in a lot of games this season. I know a lot of teams would say the same, but it's. They haven't looked far away from that sort of Wolves West Ham level when I've seen them. But then there have been games I haven't seen, like the infamous Watford at home, which I know, you know, I know all those sort of deficiencies and shortcomings have reared their head. So I feel like Villa aren't far away from being a better team. But when it's like those kind of inconsistencies that let you down again and again, and when you are sort of a slightly streaky team, it's not that easy to make that next step. And you know, it's not easy to do what West Ham have done the last two seasons, I'll put it that way.
Pains me when you bring up Watford, the fact that they've took 6 points off Villa this season. Unbelievable.
It's mad when you I mean, look, I know every team has got those sort of, you know, oh, if we hadn't lost, you know, if we hadn't dropped points to this lot or that lot. But you look at how Villa have performed in those big games and not really got what they deserved in some of those sort of big games against the better teams. But then to perform so poorly in some of the easy games, it is frustrating. It does point to a sort of mindset thing. Not that they're, you know, incredibly flaky players or anything like that, but that it's just really difficult to iron that out into a team that's not only consistent week to week to week, but to a team that is consistent for 90 minutes, and you're not going to get, you know, a goal like the second one, you know, where Douglas Luiz, who I thought had a really good game, just allows himself to, you know, to be dispossessed by Thiago, and then Liverpool are away and sort of 5 seconds later it's in the net.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Catch all new episodes Thursdays on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer, if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Talking of the bad performances that you've just discussed, let's talk about John Moss. strange evening from John Moss. I mean, you think if he's retiring, he wants to go out on a high. He seemed to want the opposite. Yes, I'm not even saying he was bad for just Villa, because I think he's probably bad for Liverpool as well in a lot of respects, but it was just a bizarre performance from him, and I don't think many people will be sad to see the back of him after last night.
I really try to, unless we're talking about a glaring error, which was game-changing, where it's, really kind of, this has to be better. I really try to avoid kind of focusing on referees, because I do think they've got a thankless task. I thought John Moss last night, I don't think he's ever been the best referee, if I put it that way. There's an appearance thing with him where he looks sort of, he used to be a school teacher actually, but he looks like the kind of, geography teacher taking a PE lesson when the PE teacher's off, and he's got that kind of appearance. And I don't think he's ever been, nobody's even positive about the good referees in the Premier League, like Michael Oliver and almost nobody else. But if you're a referee who just looks off the pace and does make mistakes, sometimes you're going to get a lot of grief. I thought last night he looked like somebody who was probably counting down the days till he won't look back on his final game at Villa Park that fondly. And it wasn't like, I know there was sort of questions raised about the Liverpool equaliser, but I don't feel like the mistakes that he made, or the questionable ones, or the ones that got everybody's backs up on both teams, both managers, both sets of fans, were glaring. It just felt like he was behind the play, and he was guessing at times. I think he looked like a referee who was probably ready to retire.
Yeah, I don't for one second think that he cost Villa the game or anything like that. He was just, like you said, it was almost like he was guessing with decisions. He got so many little things wrong during the game, and it was a really good game anyway. But with a competent referee, I actually think it would have been an even better game.
You could just sense the frustration and growing sort of bewilderment from the crowd, where you could see, it would go out for a throw-in, or there was a little, skirmish in midfield, and they weren't necessarily big decisions, but there was just a growing sense of he doesn't know. He's going to point that way because he pointed that way the previous time. I don't like slaughtering referees. I think they've got an absolutely thankless task, but it was. All you'd say is that none of them required a VAR intervention. None of them ended up on the back pages. Those decisions, they were just sort of. It was a succession of probably fairly marginal calls in some cases that you just seemed to be getting wrong or questionable, and thankfully it didn't cost anybody the game. But it's he's done well. He's done well to have a career at that level. I think probably the time has come for him to concentrate on his other pursuits, which are very interesting, actually.
Yeah, we won't dwell on John Moss. I just wanted to get your take on him, because he has, like I say, a really bizarre display. What did you make of Philip Coutinho? I thought he looked leggy pretty much throughout, really, and he's not really been far in the last five or six games for Villa. Now Villa are going to sign him. Gerrard wants him. The club want him. I think he'll be at Villa Park next season. He's had moments of absolute brilliance where, he's really taken games to teams, and he's a world-class player, and I don't for one second think Villa shouldn't sign him, because they absolutely should. But he doesn't look quite right to me at the moment.
Yeah, I find it a really interesting one, because if you look at his impact since coming in January, it has definitely been positive. He's made the team better. He started 14 of the games. He's generally, but he's been a bit you know, I said the team's a bit sort of inconsistent, a bit streaky. I think you'd say he has been a bit like that. He's had sort of two good games on the run and two sort of poor games. I don't think he's necessarily sort of, you know, he picked up the pace of the Premier League again straight away, but he's not necessarily quite found his place in this team, or maybe he's not really recovered his own sort of match-to-match-to-match rhythm after the strange few seasons he's had at, you know, at Barcelona and briefly at Bayern. But he's, you saw the quality, that moment where he flicked the ball over.
Oh, yeah.
Alexander Arnold's head and 1-2 with Digne, and then a lovely shot which had, you know, which flew over the bar, just over the bar. I mean, that's the quality. That's the quality that you pay for. But I just felt when Villa were playing really well in the first half, he wasn't necessarily absolutely integral to that. And when I saw Buendia coming on, I thought, well, this is going to be interesting. Is he going to go for one up front, or is he going to take Coutinho off and put Buendia on? And I think, you know, it was the right decision, I think, to replace Coutinho with Buendia. And I thought Buendia looked so lively and full of ideas coming on. And Gerrard was interesting, actually, when he spoke about it afterwards. He said, you know, I mean, he seemed quite sensitive to the suggestion that, or the inference that he'd maybe got that decision wrong, that he should have stuck with Buendia after the game the other day. But it was, he was also saying, you know, sometimes I won't play two centre forwards. Sometimes I'll play two number 10s. Sometimes I'll play, you know, one of the 10s out wide, the other one in the middle. We'll play different systems. We need to change it match to match. I think that the system was absolutely right yesterday. I think you could, it probably is a really good thing to be having the flexibility that having both of those guys brings. But I don't know. It's more, I suppose he's 29, is he? It's, you know, 30 in June, looking at it. The wages are going to be big. I look, it sounds like Villa, you know, he and Villa are desperate to, you know, Gerrard and Villa are desperate to get the deal done and make it permanent. It's one where you could feasibly, you know, find somebody out there that could do the same job and be, you know, 8 years younger or whatever. But it's, well, I say feasible, but it's easier said than done, isn't it? If you've got somebody in the building and they're playing well and they're contributing, it's probably hard to look away from that when they've got the quality and experience that Coutinho has. But I'll be interested to see hear what the finances involved are, because it's clearly going to be big wages, and it's, you know, the Villa are going to have other areas that they want to strengthen this summer.
I personally still think it's a no-brainer, because we aren't going to be able to attract world-class players at this point, and he is a world-class player, and he has got that relationship with Gerrard, which has given Villa an advantage in getting him in. I think when he first came in, he got his confidence back quite quickly, probably felt a little bit of love that he hadn't had for a while, and he started well and hit the ground running for Villa. For whatever reason, I feel like he's lost his confidence again at the minute. I mean, you might have seen more of Coutinho over the years than me when he was at Liverpool, for example. Has he always been a confidence player?
I would say he's always been a confident player. He's always been, you know, when he was at Liverpool, at least, he was never afraid of sort of running at people and dribbling at them, and in that fantastic sort of futsal influenced dribbling style he's got, and cracking a shot from, you know, 25 yards, 30 yards, and often finding the top corner. Obviously, the last 4 years have been pretty tough for him in terms of the Barcelona experience, and just, you know, I think when players don't really feel wanted, don't really feel loved, you know, I think it probably can have a sort of long term effect on their confidence. But you saw, as you said, the uplift when he arrived, and the uplift that he brought to Villa, and the immediate quality that he was showing. But yeah, the you look at the stats, you know, I don't think he's scored since the Leeds game in, what was that, early March. No assists since around the same time, Southampton. And it's, you know, we shouldn't always just measure things in goals and assists, goal contributions, as people call them. But it's I think you look at the team's performance without him at Burnley, and you look at him being. I just felt he was a bit peripheral against Liverpool. At times you saw the quality, but it wasn't like you were looking at him thinking, yeah, he's the guy who's taken Villa to the next level. I think it was a really, really strong team performance, and he was perhaps one of the weaker links on the night. But that's probably harsh. But I don't think it's look from the outside, and I don't watch Villa anything like as much as you do, and I'm totally. I might be speaking out of turn, or might be misjudging the situation completely, but I wouldn't have said it was a no-brainer to sign him. I would say he's shown his quality, but sometimes a player can show their quality and be a good player for a sort of half season impact, but not be if you're giving him a 3-year contract, is to take him from when he's 30 to when he's 33 or something like that, and when he's had a good 2 months at Villa followed by a sort of less good 2 months. I don't think it's easy to say that that's a great investment for the next 3 years, but I'm aware that that's not the view within the club and it's and within the fan base. So I'm probably really wrong.
No, I think there's probably more people that agree with you from a Villa side, from Villa fans, than you would think. Actually, I think it's probably around a 50-50 split from what I see at the moment. But it will be interesting to see what happens in the summer. I do think they'll get him, but we will see what happens. Just before I let you go, Villa haven't finished top half since the 2010-2011 season. Is it a big psychological thing that they do that this season, heading into next season?
Whether you finish, they'll finish with fewer points than last season, I think, because that's probably a better gauge of a team's performance over the course of the season than the league position. Sometimes you can finish, there'll be seasons when teams have finished in the top half with a lot fewer points than Villa got last season. And, Villa could finish ninth or ninth with fewer points this time. So I don't think top half or not, top half is a good challenge for Gerrard to set his players and it's a good sort of yardstick, I suppose. But I would say, if they're, say win two of the next three, or win one and then draw one, then take a draw at Man City on the final day, I think that would all be an incredibly positive end to the season and what's been a season of change. And then you'd expect Gerrard to make some, good signings, high calibre signings, I think, in the summer. If you were to look at all the teams that are sort of outside the top seven or so, you would say Everton, if they stay up, should be stronger next season. Newcastle, with what's going on there, should be stronger next season. I think you'd say Villa should be stronger next season. And maybe Leicester, depending on what they do. But it's really competitive. It's getting more and more competitive. And finishing the top half isn't that easy, but I would say it would feel progressive to finish in the top half, because that record is, for a club of Villa size, it just isn't good enough, is it? And it's not even as if that 2010-11 season was a great one or particularly memorable one. It was the Julio season, wasn't it, after Martin O'Neill had left? It felt like things were sort of going downhill, and it would be nice, I'm sure, to finish in the top half. But I think you can probably look at areas where improvements have been made over the course of the season, not necessarily from last season, but over the course of the season. And you can look at areas that there's room for improvement, and there's areas that definitely will be improved next season. So I don't think top half or not is the be all or end all, but I think finishing the season with another three good performances is really important. And it's interesting as well that Villa have been in this position where they've been playing against sort of teams that have got so much to play for. Norwich, I know, were sort of a bit down and out, but Burnley at the weekend, Liverpool, and it's Burnley again, isn't it? And then obviously Man City, it could be Villa could be having a say in a lot of the big issues, but I don't think anybody who was wondering what kind of Villa performance they would get against Steven Gerrard's former club, and I don't think anybody would be disappointed by the way Villa applied themselves.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Villa women finished their WSL campaign on Sunday with a record crowd at Villa Park to see the Second City derby. Unfortunately for the 8,000 fans who showed up on a beautiful Sunday afternoon, it wasn't the result we were looking for. An early error from the returning Hannah Hampton gifted Blues the lead, and despite dominating possession and territory, Villa just couldn't find the net. We're told that strikers are incoming this summer and goals are what this team really needs. Here are the thoughts of manager Carla Ward.
Defence v attack, but only one stat matters in the end, and I think we've battered them completely, dominated the game. Sadly, it's a mistake that's cost us, but it's a difficult one to take because you sit there and you have a look at the game, and we've completely dominated it. But like I said, only one stat matters, and that's the fact that we've lost the game. We spoke about it. We knew they'd come out. We knew that they've got nothing to play for now, and it was a bit of a free hit for them. So we're disappointed. We're really disappointed. We're disappointed with the start. We're disappointed with the goal. We're disappointed that we're on the end of a defeat, because actually at periods today we've played really well, but ultimately we've got to learn when a team like Birmingham come here and put 11 bodies behind the ball, we've got to try and learn how to break that down and be patient with that. We know that the final third's been a problem, and it's something that obviously we'll absolutely address in the window, but this group this season have been sensational. There's been highs, there's been lows, but they're an unbelievable group to work with. They'll hurt from this, and I said to him, you've got to use this ready to go in pre-season. And whilst it was the last day of the season, we wanted it to be finishing on a high naturally, but they're a resilient group. They'll stick together and we'll go again.
Today will hurt, like you say, but how pleased were you to finish the season in front of such a good crowd?
Yeah, and you heard them at one point when they all started singing, I think after we had three or four attempts on goal in the space of a minute, and you really heard them. So it was sensational, and I think Lee said there was obviously a few thousand first time to a women's game, which is positive, so hopefully they'll come back. Hopefully the performance is enough to bring them back, but yeah, it's a really tough one standing here right now on the back of a defeat. So I think, listen, we've got to bring bodies through the door, we know that. Obviously, we've identified the number of bodies, so it's about really getting down to work and getting them in. There'll obviously be a holiday for the staff mentally, but I think it's really important that we get bodies through the door, quality bodies that we know that are going to improve us, and then obviously look forward to pre-season.
Yeah, like the men's team, I feel like the Villa women aren't too far away from being a really good side, but they just can't put the ball in the back of the net. And like I said just before the interview, they need to get some goal scorers in. I think that will really revamp the side and change the direction that they're heading in. But Carla Ward, I spent a lot of time with her last week. Really, really impressive character, and the Villa women are in safe hands. There was a great reception for Anita Asante on her final bout as a professional footballer, and playing in front of that crowd at Villa Park left her in a positive mood about the direction the team is headed in, despite the result.
Yeah, it's fantastic. You know, that's what we want, you know, for our club, but the women's game in general. And it's a lovely way to cap off my time here, my journey in football. Like you mentioned, the homecoming at Arsenal was just unbelievable, you know, and such an overwhelming experience. But I couldn't have really asked for anything better.
Were you perhaps surprised by how quickly Birmingham came out of the blocks today?
Yeah, I think we knew what to expect. We knew that they would be a dogged team. You know, they're really hardworking, and they're really dangerous in the counter-attack and transition moments. And, you know, a mistake cost us today, but there's lots of positives to take as well for moving on to next season. And that's the most important thing, is that there's progression beyond this season. If you look at last season compared to now, you know, we've dominated possession in a number of games, and we're showing that belief as a team and as a squad, creating chances. And now it's a case of being clinical, you know, in the moments that matter and the moments that lead to outcomes in terms of results. So that's definitely going to be, I'm sure, the focus for next season. The building blocks are here. They've been in place all season. And, you know, we have a great attitude in terms of the players and the staff, and a drive to progress and move forward. So there's no reason why we can't build on this season and hopefully be even more clinical next season.
And for you personally, what will the next couple of months involve for you?
I think putting my feet up, resting a little bit, enjoying being around, you know, my friends and family and everyone again, and just taking it all in and reflecting on this journey, and hopefully then diving back into it in some capacity.
And if you haven't checked it out already, Flo Lloyd Hughes has done a brilliant summary of tributes to Anita. It really, really is a great piece, and you can see the mark that she's left on the women's game and football in general. So if you haven't read that yet, go and check it out, because it's a lovely read. Just one more line to catch up on. Mark Delaney, the under-23s manager, he's going to be leaving Aston Villa at the end of the season. We wish him well with whatever's next. We're going to get more details on that next week with Greg when he's back from his trip. But until then, you can read the latest updates on Aston Villa on The Athletic. And if you're not a subscriber already, don't forget, it's just £1 per month for your first 6 months of The Athletic when you sign up at theathletic.com/villapod. Thanks to Ollie Kay for joining me. Here's to 3 points against Palace on Sunday. Have a great rest of the week, and up the Villa.
The Athletic.